In 2003, there was a young man living in Perth, 20 years old, and addicted to heroin, doing about $130 of heroin a day at his highest point. Catholic, from a very good family. Father's a lawyer, mother was an architect, went to a very good Catholic high school. And yet, in a seriously bad way, his family, in desperation, had put him through every possible rehabilitation clinic that was available, and nothing had worked. Around the middle of 2003, his brother, who was living in Sydney, he was a very successful man working in finance, and also a very strong Christian. His brother woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, feeling very clearly God saying to him, "Your brother's about to die, go to Perth." So he cancelled all of his appointments, booked a flight, got the first flight he could, and started walking around the city looking for his brother. As soon as he found him, grabbed hold of him, rented an apartment, threw him inside, locked the door, and for 2 weeks sat on the ground and read the Bible to him as he went through withdrawal from heroin, which is a pretty horrible thing. At the end of 2 weeks, he was a transformed person. Now, his brother obviously couldn't afford to be away from work for too long, so he hooked him up with a group called Teen Challenge, another Christian group which devotes their whole lives to working with young people who are drug addicted, particularly through the grace of the baptism of the Holy Spirit. And so this young man took the next step and had an extremely powerful rehabilitation through this community, even to the point of physical healing. He'd suffered all his life from scoliosis. His whole back was bent and had a miraculous healing through people's prayer through this. And so this man who was on the verge of death started to become alive again, to the point where, you know, he claimed that his one desire was that he wanted to be a missionary. He wanted to go and work with people who were in the same position he was in. Now, unfortunately, because of certain crimes he'd committed in his addicted days, he had to leave that place and begin a time of home detention. The court had assigned him to 12 months home detention to pay for all the break and enters he'd done, which in one sense was a blessing because it kept him away from all of his old scene. But it also cut him off from the Christian community because he wasn't allowed out of his house. And so 12 months later, in the middle of 2004, his time of detention finished. And not being connected to the community of the church, he slid back into his old connections and his old habits, and in June that year died of an overdose. It's an absolutely tragic story. And we can kind of sit here and say, well, who's responsible? Who's to blame for that? But I think the more correct story is to say, where was he on the branch? The gospel we've just heard, Jesus saying, "I am the vine, you are the branches." Now, I think in our Western individualistic world, we simply assume that means everyone is directly connected to Christ, therefore if they stuff up, it's their fault. But next time you're walking past a tree, have a close look and you realize that branches are connected to other branches, and those branches are connected to other branches, and so on. And so if one branch is not transferring the life from the roots outwards, everything else connected to it will die. No matter how much it wants to live, if it can't get the nutrients from the roots because the other branches aren't doing their job, they're dead for no fault of their own. I would suggest that this is the image of church that Christ is trying to present to us in the gospel today. That This is a real call to us to understand our place in the world and the absolute importance of our vocation. Yeah, if you look back at the story of that young man, you know, he went from death to life and then back to death again, depending on who invested in him, depending on who was prepared to pour out their life so that he would live. Now, that's an enormous sacrifice that even complete strangers made for him so that he would live. This is how we need to understand the interconnectedness of our world. I think, sadly, because of this whole individualistic philosophy, it has very much infiltrated the church, where we start talking so much about personal salvation, you know, your personal prayer, your personal this, your personal that. We actually start to forget that it's communal. And if you actually go and sit down with the catechism sometime and read how the Catholic Church understands salvation, it strongly emphasizes the fact that everybody is interconnected. What you do in your faith has an immediate effect on everybody else. You are connected to other branches. There are other branches that are feeding off your life. And my guess is that most of them, you're not even aware of it, because many of them might already be dead. They might be the people you walk past and judge or scoff at or think, glad I'm not him. And yet maybe they were the ones who were relying upon the life flowing through your veins. As a church, we can minimize the faith to simply being a bit like a lifeboat. I'm saved, the world's sinking, that's okay. I've got my salvation, I'm good. We kind of have this lifeboat mentality. And when we talk about evangelization, it's simply about who are my loved ones who I want to be in the lifeboat with me. You know, our talk of mission is simply save the ones we care for. But at what point do we recognize that the boat's sinking because of us? You know, there's no point us jumping ship and running away and trusting in the fact that we've got a ticket to heaven. At what point do we start to recognize that the life or death of the world depends upon us? You know, once again, if you sit next time you go for a walk, have a close look at trees. Because what you'll notice is that the trees that are closest to the trunk are really quite ugly. They don't have leaves, they don't bear fruit, they don't have flowers. They're just big and fat. All they do is just feed the other branches, which are the ones we delight in, the small, fragile ones on the periphery that are beautiful. Somewhere in every person's life, there is a decision made about what you want to be. Do you want your life to be beautiful and flowery, green, delightful? I would suggest most people do. That most people look at their life and they think, well, I want to be glorious. I want to be on the receiving end, basically. I want to be the one that everyone admires and looks at and says, you have the most glorious life. I'm envious. You know, best clothes, best adventures, best holidays, best this, best that. We want to be on the end of the branch, the one that everyone delights in. No one wants to be the big, fat, ugly branch at the core of the tree. The one that gets forgotten. The one that everyone else depends upon. First reading, we have a very decisive moment in the history of the world. The point where St. Paul starts to preach. After his dramatic conversion, Paul comes back, and as it says, He started preaching fearlessly in the name of the Lord. Basically, what Paul has done here is he's said, well, whether consciously or not, he's made a decision to devote the whole of his life to take the grace of Christ and spread it to the whole world, to feed everyone else, to create new branches and encourage those branches, feed those branches until they spread out and create new branches, and so on. If the church was a tree, Paul would be one of the biggest, fattest branches connected to the trunk. And even today, he keeps feeding us through the letters he wrote. This was a man who basically knew his purpose, knew why he existed, and he chose to devote everything for us. Not for himself. Was his life beautiful and green? Was his life full of flowers? If you read the Acts of the Apostles, you'll realize very quickly, no. Read what he says in the letter to the Corinthians. I'm scourged, I'm beaten, I'm rejected. You know, I've been shipwrecked, hungry, lonely. You know, his whole life was suffering. For who? For whom did he do this? It was for us. It was that the grace of Christ would be transferred from the roots outwards into the church. And 2,000 years later, we are still feeding off that trunk, or off that branch. I think this is the question for us. This is where the gospel really hits home. What are you? What do you want to be? Christ has a call upon your life, but you have absolute power as to what you do with it. Yes, you have beautiful dreams, you have plans, you have so many adventures and ideas of what you want to do in your life. And the whole world is selling you this plan, saying, be green and flowery and fruitful and wonderful. Be the envy of everybody. If we do not believe in the resurrection, then surely that is the only purpose of life. Be as wonderful as you can be now, because there's nothing when you're dead. But if we do believe in the power of the resurrection, then everything needs to change. If we actually understand the logic of Christianity, that it is not for this life we live, then that should influence every decision we make about your time, your finances, your purpose, your dreams, what you do tomorrow, what you do tonight, what you say to the person next to you. Everything changes. As it says in the second reading, our love is not to be just words or mere talk, but something real and active. So many Christians will sit around and say, oh, drug addiction, terrible, we really should do something about that. Maybe we should pray or sometime encourage somebody else to do something. But how many would actually say, well, I'm going to change everything and start working in the field? How many people would walk past a homeless person and think, oh, gee, maybe tomorrow I should bring some small change and do something about that? Who will actually just sit down and ask them their name and, you know, start finding out who they are, recognize their humanity, feed life into them, regardless of whether you've got money or not? You know, the person you know, the people in your family who are depressed, lonely, where we can so easily start to see them as a problem that needs to be fixed. At what point do we just recognize that maybe I'm a branch that needs to just feed life and love into them? You know, just embrace them with my words and my smile and just restore their dignity and their humanity. It takes an absolute commitment. It means turning away from our selfishness, that desire to be at the end of the branch receiving all the time, and actually recognize, I want to be a mediator of grace. I want my life to be a mediator of life and the love of God. Devote your whole being to that. And there you'll start to understand what vocation actually is, what your place in the world is. You know, we will often never see the fruit of what we're doing, but we need to do it anyway. You know, we'll often never see the person being grateful for the love we give, but we need to love anyway. There's a point in the catechism which always encourages and scares me at the same time, where it talks about the last judgment, saying that at the end of time, when everything's wrapped up, the final judgment, we will see before us the consequences of all of our actions played out through the whole of history, both our sin and our virtue. It's kind of terrifying, isn't it? But once again, it's this communal understanding that we are part of this glorious vine. Everyone is connected. Every decision I make is connected. It's not simply just me. The idea that, you know, I didn't hurt anyone, so I can do that. You know, the modern philosophy of morality, if it doesn't hurt anyone, it's okay. It's a load of rubbish. And as a church, we need to proclaim that because everything is connected. Every decision we make is either bringing life or death to the rest of the vine. I'm either opening myself to become a channel of grace, or I'm closing myself off and having no idea who else is affected. So as we come to the source of all grace here in the Eucharist, let's come listening deeply to his call, his desperate cry that his church would be able to bring life to the world that is dying, that we would be able to be the ones who could step into the gap and bring life. Make that decision to be a mediator of grace, transferring life from here out to the world that is so desperately hungry.